This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hi, I'm Ahmad Fuad Rahman, and welcome to Night School, the show that walks you through fundamental concepts in the social sciences and humanities. Together with Sharad Kutan, this show tries to reveal how various thinkers have grappled with theories and frameworks to better to understand how society works. Each week, we discuss a classic text or an idea we hope to shed light on the world around you. Except for this week, because we're going to promote an upcoming debate, which I think is very, very exciting. It'll be located at IIUM, the International Islamic University of Malaysia, and it'll be featuring Datuk Paul Low, YB Nick Nazmi, Professor Syed Salim Farooqi, Nikki Chong, writer, lecturer, social activist, and Prof. Noor Faridah Abdul Manaf. And the topic will be everything in moderation, and it's basically going to discuss the issue of moderation in Malaysia, extremism, whether youths are drawn to either side. And to unpack that theme with us today, Sharad, we have Liana Khairuddin, or rather Dr. Liana Khairuddin from Ceria at University Malaya. Welcome.
You just, if I can sort of point to something that you're part of, the group of 40, did you just sign a letter? Exactly. So actually we really ought to talk about that too. And maybe we could begin with that. If you could just explain to us this letter that you're part of, you signed off on a letter. You also were someone who started the IM26, right? In response to the group 25. Of 25. So you've actually been in the middle of this, taking a very public stance on the question of moderation, where this country is going.
Okay, so it all started with the group of 25, obviously. And I think that is a thing that we Malay Muslims do feel in this country. There's a lot of Islamization that's going on. And unfortunately, the Islamization that's happening in Malaysia somehow does not reflect the true spirituality of Islam that talks about tolerance, talks about living together harmoniously, etc., etc., etc. And so with the Grove 25, they came out questioning the implementation of Sharia law, which was kind of what was being pushed at that moment, where our Minister for Religious Affairs wanted to table the bill in Parliament. And then, of course, PAS wanted to table a private hoodoos bill in Parliament as well. And so they came out with their open letter, which was received well by certain people.
Yeah, and that was called the Group of 33, wasn't it?
Yeah, and so then there's the Group of 33 that says, no, we should amend the constitution in order to implement Sharia law, because Sharia law is divine law, we are an Islamic country. And so the trouble with that, the first week when that letter was published, was the fact that the discourse was kind of in a level where it seems that the grassroots do not want to talk about it. And that's when I approached Datuk Farida and her nephew, Tariq Ismail, and I said, look, actually, we do want to talk about it. I'm just a normal citizen of Malaysia and I wanted to talk about it. And so what do you think if we start an online petition? And so we'll garner some support for the Group of 25. And so I started IM26. And then, of course, there's this discourse that happened, which is what we wanted. We wanted people to start talking about it. Unfortunately, the discourse that happened, somehow, I don't know whether to say that there's no discourse or the fact that Malaysians will say, some Malaysians will say, you cannot debate this because this is divine law. And then also excluding the non-Muslims from it because they say this is a Muslim issue, etc.
I mean, I think one of the things that really marks, you know, someone like you and the Group of 25, and actually for the longest time, Sisters in Islam and, you know, the people around the Islamic Renaissance Front that you were part of, Fuad, is this idea of kind of social courage, you know, this ability to speak against the grain, speak against what is the prevailing and predominant view of how things ought to work, and find that courage, because in fact it's become an act of courage to speak up against this bureaucratized version of Islam that has taken over the country. And so, you know, for me, that's the first thing that strikes me. The other thing, and I agree with you about the discourse issue, is the question of a lack of clarity, because we also have, on the other hand, the global movement of moderates, you know, sponsored by the government, sponsored by the prime minister, funded by, you know, taxpayers' money. And there's a lot of kind of talk around it, though the question is whether with their sense of, you know, moderation, it's much more directed to the outside world. It's about creating an image of Malaysia as a moderate Muslim country rather than in some ways weighing in on what actually is happening inside the country.
The more basic issue is that a lot of appeal to moderation is heard, but I don't think there's a overarching understanding of what it means. And I also feel that it's not necessarily the term to push forward. Because, frankly, a lot of the times that I have engaged with so-called conservatives or extremists, they have no problems admitting with the fact that they're moderate. You know, they feel that, no, we're actually moderate because we're going through the rule of law, we're going through processes, we're not just shoving this agenda down anybody's throat. It's going to be debated in
Parliament. So you don't mean moderate, so you mean conservative, you mean?
No, but conservatives don't think they are extremists, right? Because there's a lot of labelling going around.
Okay.
So the conservatives will call the moderates, actually they're liberals, they're secularists or whatever, and then the moderates will call the conservative extremists, or they don't understand the spiritual through spiritual meaning of Islam. So what you have is a cacophony of claims from one to the other saying, you don't understand Islam, no, you don't understand Islam, no, you don't understand. And I think there's a lot, it's a very healthy to have that sort of debate. Yeah, but I just wonder if we've reached a point where it's saturated and the question of what next arises.
Yeah. And I think, in fact, with the Group of 40, it's very interesting because it was headlined in Malaysia Kini as genuine moderation. And the question is whether that was to distinguish it from the moderation that's used by as a kind of cover for not really talking about anything substantial. You know, there's genuine moderation, and then there's, well, moderation that everybody can use and claim to be, you know?
No, so this is, okay, so with the Group of 25, when I wanted to draft IM26, I did ask Dato' Farida, like, are we going to only say Malay Muslim can sign this? And so that's why if you read the petition IM26, it's actually Malaysians who are of Malay heritage and Muslim in, you know, like, I mean, our constitution doesn't divide that, but we wanted to make it clear that the Malay Muslims in this country are not just talking on that side of the fence. There's also people on this side of the fence, and that's why G25 highlighted that issue. But of course, when you look at petitions that came out after G25, there was also another petition called Kami Juga 25, and that particular petition talked something like what the G40 talked about, like, you know, wanting a Malaysian that is secular, etc., etc., etc. And so I think it's kind of like an organic movement in a way. You have to start with people who are directly affected by it speaking up first, and then come everybody else. And I think that's what the G40 was aiming to do. But again, the G40 wants to move the attention away from only talking about Sharia law. That was the purpose, the start of G25. That was the purpose of IM26. And then we needed to discuss other things as well. And that's why the G40 came out as they did.
Right. So can you share a bit about your experience of trying to promote these discourses or these petitions in particular? Mm. Has there been much skepticism? Has there been enthusiasm? What have you observed?
It was met with both. So when the G25 came out, everybody gave a sigh of relief because nobody from the civil service started talking. I mean, it's kind of like an open secret that people in the civil service are supposed to just follow the government. It's like we don't have ideas, we don't have brains. We are very intelligent people, most of us. But anyway, so... but of course, one of my friends said it very well, and she said, you know, the government will not change policies just because the people wants it. They will change policies because it serves their agenda or what they want for the country, and it's always going to be this group of people. The power of the people is only in their one vote. And I said, that's true too, but again, you know, if we don't voice out, then the government will think that everything's fine and dandy, and that's not right as well. So there's skepticism. There's also people who don't care because they think that this is not a problem, and it came from both sides. It came from the non-Muslims that say this is a Muslim problem. You guys solve it among yourself. You can tussle and hustle and whatever. You want hudud law, you don't want hudud law. Doesn't affect us. And then also came from the Muslims themselves that say you cannot challenge the hudud law, it's divine law. And to which I replied, have you actually read the Kelantan-Hudud Bill? And have you actually read the Constitution? Because I didn't. I started reading. And then I said, hang on, there's something fundamentally wrong here. As a woman, especially in Malaysia, I already feel that there's a lot of misogyny going on. And by implementing these particular laws, I'm going to be, you know, forced to wear the burqa. So, anyway.
I just want to dovetail that comment you made about how unexpected some moderates can be, you know, in the sense that I know liberal, English-speaking, Western-educated Malay Muslims who you think, going by impression, wouldn't be for the Hudud Bill because they'd be hanging out at SIDS on the weekends or something like that. But when you really ask them, they'll be like, that's divine. When we think about, you know, the state of discourse and we attach these labels, they only make sense up to a certain point. Yeah.
I think part of the problem is the way in which the discourse blurs the lines between say the question of a particular legal document, the Kelantan, the Kelantan Sharia Criminal Enactment Bill, and the question of the religion and faith, right? So it's like there's a purposeful collapsing of one into the other. So what is specific to the state of Kelantan now becomes a question not just about that state and what its politics and, you know, things that Mahathir has been saying in many ways, but becomes about the religion in total. Mm-hmm. And is that to reject the Kelantan Bill is to reject the religion. Mm-hmm. And that's a very clever rhetorical strategy by the proponents of this bill, because that serves their purpose. As long as you cannot make a distinction, you'll be forced to say you want it. Mm. Because who will say, if you're a believing Catholic, that you know, or a Muslim in this instance, will say you against your own religion? Mm-hmm. You won't, right? Mm-hmm. But that's not what is being asked of you. You're being asked to think about the question of the implications for a multi-religious, multi-faith community, which is the nation. You know, it's not just Malaya. It's also Borneo. It's the states of Sabah and Sarawak, where, you know, it's not just indigenous and non-indigenous. It's a whole range of things that make the society possible. And so the implications and what is being demanded for you to think about is not just whether your own personal faith is affected or enhanced by this, but actually its implications of the nation, right? Mm-hmm. I think one of the things that we need to talk about more in part two is to really get to grips with the meaning of moderation. And in some ways, you anticipated that forward by talking about the kind of binaries that we have. So it's moderates against extremists, it's liberals versus conservatives. And what is it that we mean by these rather large categories? Mm-hmm. Azim Ibrahim of the Scotland Institute wrote an article in 2012 that what does moderate mean in Malaysia? And his matrix is very simple. It's a question of violence. And he says, Malaysia is ranked 20th in the 2012 Global Peace Index by the Institute for Economics and Peace, and is the second highest Muslim nation in that ranking, outdone only by Qatar. Malaysia's tranquility has been achieved by a stable, though autocratic, democracy. So it's very interesting. So for him, it is the lack of violence that somehow redeems us and keeps us on this moderate side of this moderate versus extremist binary. And the question is whether that's sufficient. I mean, from a Malaysian point of view, is Azim's, you know, standard yardstick adequate?
And from a, say, a psychoanalytic point of view, there are epistemic violences to consider as well. And the trauma of every day waking up to a discourse at a national level that contemplates stoning and whipping and the chopping of hands can be quite disturbing if you are habituated by it. So anyway, more to unpack the implications of what we understand by moderation. And this is all in the build-up to a really awesome debate to be hosted at International Islamic University on the 27th of April, 7 p.m., featuring the likes of Dr. Paul Low, YB Nick Nazmi, and Dr. Noor Farida Abdul Manaf, among the panelists who will be discussing what moderation means. And we'll be doing just that in the second part of the show. You're listening to me, Ahmad Fuad Rahmat, alongside Sharat Kutan. We're joined this week by Liana Khairuddin of UM. This is Night School on BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, you're listening to Night School. I'm Ahmad Fuad Rahmat. Alongside me, as usual, is Sharat Kutan. We are joined this week by Dr. Liana Khairuddin of University of Malaya, in particular, Ceria, and you research HPV and HIV. But you're also a very outspoken social activist on moderation, really. I think you're the person to speak about here, because that's pretty much how I think I got to know of your work as well.
Yeah.
And we're actually previewing some of the key themes that will be touched on this debate called The Great Debate at the International Islamic University of Malaysia, featuring Datuk Paul Loh, Nick Nazmi, Professor Datuk Dr. Syed Salim Farooqi, Nikki Chong, and Professor Noor Farida Abdul Manaf. They're going to unpack what moderation means and the state of Malaysia as a moderate country. And this debate is brought to you by the British High Commission of Kuala Lumpur and the University of Nottingham.
Well, you know, I wrote a piece for a weekly magazine called Focus Malaysia. And my column I talked about, and it was titled The Perils of Moderation. And of course, it was an attempt to knock the moderation campaign here, because I think, in fact, whatever your definition of moderation, it's actually much better than being on the other side. But my concern is we haven't quite defined what we on this side are and what that other side is and how do we in fact in some ways engage with that other side. And so I began with referring to Azim Ibrahim of the Scotland Institute and saying that his definition is rather limited, because it just talks about the lack of violence. Mm. And, you know, Fuad, you talk about epistemic violence. I mean, the violence that comes from the language you use, the kind of discourses and, you know. And I wouldn't even go that far.
Sure,
but
sure.
I do think that, for me, the more troubling thing is that in Malaysia, this peace, and Azim kind of acknowledges this, has been achieved through some autocratic means. So basically, we have a peace that's based on a clamping down of society by the state. And I wonder if that is sufficient, because what happens if moderates have to rally behind, or people in Malaysia rally behind moderation, but moderates also advocate authoritarian controls, then we have a problem. Mm-hmm. You know, and is, you know, is moderation one of those vague categories that will remain vague because it's most useful when it's vague? You know, mm-hmm. It's one of those situations, right? It's like Vision 2020. The less you actually pin it down, the more powerful it is.
Mm-hmm.
But it, you know, in mobilizing people. So those are some of the concerns I express in my column, perhaps in a little more coherent fashion. But
and that's available online. People can just Google it.
Yeah, I think it's on Focus Malaysia. But yeah, Leanne, what do you want moderation to mean? Do you want moderation to mean an end to this drift towards religion being involved in state and governance, kind of return to the past, which I think in some ways part of the discourse, a lot of this nostalgia, this is the old Malaysia where we were much more tolerant and accepting and we could, you know, drink together, party together. I mean, there's ways in which people figure moderation. Or is moderation a future-oriented project in which we're kind of imagining a changed Malaysia, new realities, but different?
Okay, so there was a term for that used in a forum by Azmi Sharum. He said that we were romanticizing the past. Because all of us, and I admit I fell for that trap too. When I talk about moderation, I talk about unity, I always go back to the speech that was given by Tunku Abdul Rahman during our Merdeka. And it was so beautiful because it was like, you know, Malaysia is this great country that's going to, you know, be the beacon of light in a disturbed and distorted world. And I was like, this is a very powerful speech. And I always look back at, you know, pictures of old Malaya, like when we were in our kebaya and nobody gives... nobody has a problem with, you know, people in a kebaya at a pub, you know, and people drinking Guinness and all of that. And in a way, I do want kind of like a society that we stop talking about judging other people based on how religious or how, you know, how they are supposed to be, and start talking about what is the problem, the real problem. There are so many issues that are happening in this country, and everybody talks about across. And it's really, it's a part of me is really sad, but a part of me also kind of like, okay, so what can we do to change this? You know, what can we do to kind of change the discourse? So when you talk about moderation, actually, it's oxymoron in the sense that if you are a Muslim, actually you're supposed to be moderate, because the fact being that we are supposed to practice wasatiyah, We're supposed to practice, you know, not excessive in anything. Even when we do good, we should not show it off too much. You know, you show it off in order to kind of make, not show off, but kind of like tell only certain people about it in order to generate more kindness and all of that, but not too excessive. It's always, when you look back into Islam, it's always about being middle, being like, you know, listen to both sides, and never do things excessively, only, you know, kind of like the middle way, wasatiyah way.
Can I stop it right there? I just want to ask Fuad about that. I mean, can moderates, and this is a kind of rhetorical strategy, mm-hmm. is in fact to lay claim to the whole religious tradition and say, well, actually the tradition is equivalent to what we are saying, and therefore deny space, discursive space, to the other side to make their claims on the religious, on the tradition.
It works to a point, because ultimately, as you said, because these policies that are being discussed so widely are tied to certain articles of faith, then one cannot avoid referencing that faith itself. But unfortunately, I think it goes back to the discussion about those sources,
exactly.
You know, rather than what justice means or what a healthy functioning penal system should be like. So again, it collapses issues. And while I don't think that's the best way to go, because there's not going to be clarity on the issue itself, just punishment, it nonetheless has to be evoked, you know. So one of the things that I keep encountering when I try to steer it in a less religious direction is that fundamentally, they will always go back to the claim that, look, it's in the scripture. It's not something that we can debate. They can concede all those things, like you said, it's all about moderation. It's all about educating the people, making sure they know what hudud is so that they won't be afraid of it. But fundamentally, if it's the word of God, then we are in no place to question it, and we must do what we can to implement it. It evokes a lot of psychological and
sentiments.
Yeah, a lot of sentimental attachments to the issue, which makes discourse much, much more difficult. So that's just the kind of conceptual, philosophical side, but there are also concrete obstacles in that, one, for the most part, the members of these binaries rarely interact together on the same platform. It's changing a bit now, but for the most part, they're still in their own little discourses. Well, one is bigger than the other. But the second problem is that there is an equal claim to being disenfranchised. So one of the things that you will notice for among the, sort of the NGOs that do push for this hooded agenda is the idea that the world's becoming very modern, we are losing our values, or even just the fact that there's a lot of crime, things are out of control, we need stronger laws. And the other side, our side too, we say, oh, things used to be better, what's happening to us? Our values are under attack. So it's this contestation of values. And at this stage, it's really hard to see any good coming out of it. I don't want to be bleak, but that's my instinctive reaction.
There's one interesting way in which the whole democratic agenda gets turned in this debate, which is that the more populous conservative side, we're assuming the conservatives, and I think you were suggesting it earlier, the conservatives are actually the majority.
Yes.
Right? That the conservatives, in pushing for their conservative agenda, can use democracy. They will always say, well, if you truly believe in the democratic agenda and democratic processes, then you must yield to the will of the majority. And the only defense that the liberal minority has is the Constitution, is the practicality of governance in a multi-faith, multilingual, society. So it seems like in many ways the liberal minority is on a back foot, at least on a national level. We have to constantly be in a defensive position with regard to the conservatives, but recognizing that the conservatives have a very powerful argument. Their argument is essentially about democracy.
Procedural, in reference to the law and the need to debate it. They're very confident, too, that if we really get what this hudud is all about, then we'll be on their side. There's this real assurance in their approach. But the other thing, too, I just want to add to what you described there, is that liberals, too, are appealing to a textual discourse, but of a different kind, that text being constitution. So it's a hermeneutic battle to a certain level.
Okay, just to add just one quick note, footnote to this is that there are voices in Malaysia on the conservative side who are not for democracy. And that is the group, the Hizbut Tahrir.
Correct.
You know, and they've actually weighed in on this debate very recently and said to Putrajaya, addressing Putrajaya, saying, well, you know, if you're an Islamic government, then... you know, you have to put aside democracy because God's law, it cannot be debated in a democratic fashion. It cannot be subject to the whims or desires of individuals and humans, and so must yield. And so for that rallying call was, you know, put aside democracy, just implement Hudud for the country. Mm-hmm. So, and they in many ways are the extreme of the,
right,
of the
yeah.
conservative grouping that we have in some ways no platform, no common ground to discuss. Whereas it helps us understand that, in fact, there are conservatives that we can still debate with because we agree on certain basic premises, which is at least the democratic system. Mm. I mean, when you got into this, Liana, did you think that this was going to be a huge debate? Have you had to deal with this issue on a personal level, having staked a very public stance on it?
Well, I think what happened was a discourse that happens between me and my friends turned into a discourse that happened in the whole country. And I got to talk with so many other people. That was what happened. Like, we have always been talking about this. When during a forum recently, I was a panelist and I brought up the fact that when I was in university, people of different ethnic groups only got together, me and my friends, because we are considered not good enough for our ethnicities. Because my Mandarin friend can't read Chinese, and you know, and so we all, and then we all speak in English. And so somehow our own group of people kind of say we are the outcasts. And so we started forming our own little clique. And I think again, from that little discussion, you know, and I met quite a number of new friends who tells me, you know, you're not that kind of Malay. And I'm like, what kind of Malay? Is there a kind of Malay? And so, in all honesty, when you say that, you know, we need to label ourselves whether we're in this moderate box or in this extremist box, I don't actually agree with it. Because at the end of the day, all of us just need to be empowered enough in our own individual faiths and principles and then lead our lives with that. However, I also agree that there are people like the Hizbut Tahrir group that believes that, you know, this is the right way and then want to impose that on everyone else. And unfortunately, it cannot work that, you know, you're an individual. You also need to live in a society. And so you need the society to allow you, like having an enabling environment where you can practice your own faith, you can practice your own principles. And that's where democracy comes in. But you brought in a discussion about autocratic democracy, which, you know, again, in Malaysia, it's always, maybe I don't really study history that well, but the fact that our education system don't really outline, like, what is the constitution and this is how parliament works, like, you barely remember it. And then when you're an adult and you're facing with all of these issues, you're struggling to understand how this country runs, how this country works, and you want to weigh into the debate because you are affected by it.
Absolutely. I mean, I do want to say at this point, the paradox of the multicultural approach to Malaysian society has been, in fact, to, while recognizing difference on these broad categories, is actually to destroy difference within those categories.
Exactly.
So Malayness is homogenized, you know, regional differences, even the way the accents of Malay, you know, are leveled out in, you know, Bahasa Baku. And this idea that all Malays must somehow be cultural automatons. They must be like robots, you know, and all Indians are a particular sort. And, you know, and of course, it's an impossible task to, you know, destroy diversity within a community. But boy, have they tried.
But fundamentally, too, the liberals, whether they realize it or not, and this is something that so-called the conservatives pick up on, is that we are, whether we like it or not, imposing our values. We want our values to be uniform. We want a we want a separation between secular law and religious law, and we think this is good, and we're not going to be relativist about it. This is something all Malaysians, even Hizbut Tahrir, should ascribe to. But we always seem to not be aware of how our imposition affects those we're trying to reach.
Okay, so this is an interesting debate, right? Whether the secular state is in some sense a value imposition. Whereas a defender like myself of the secular state will say that, in fact, what the secular state is a state as neutral as possible with regard to all these social differences. It's a state that doesn't take sides in the discussion and says that the state that ensures peaceful coexistence. Mm. Whereas the other side's argument is that your domination through your secular state is destroys my ability to be a full human being in my own sense, right? I cannot be a full Muslim or Catholic or what Hindu because the secular state refuses to let me go there.
But why is that, Dusharat? Like, you know, if you say that the secular state allows you to be whoever you are, then you should be allowed to.
But it's limited, right? So you cannot take your religious convictions and
make
say,
law.
And make law.
Yeah.
You cannot impose it on the entire society. What the conservatives are actually arguing about is hegemony. Right? They're saying that the overarching structure, architecture of society is secular and comes from the West, basically. Mm-hmm. And they're saying they want to replace that with their own hegemony. And they will guarantee difference within that, right? I mean, that's the old model, right?
Yes.
The model is we want to be the hegemonic power. We will allow you to live in your own way. They never deny that. The extremists are not saying they want to. They're out to convert everybody. In fact, they just say, you can live in your own way.
Malacca was multicultural. The Malaccan Empire, very diverse.
That's right. So the idea is they want to be the hegemon. You know, and that's what the fight is about. And maybe that's where we have to agree that in some ways the secular state is an imposition. It is, but for me, an argument will always be that it is the only way to ensure peace. Because if we allow them, we will, in fact, be in a very painful position for a long time because hegemony, the new hegemon, will have to do a hell of a lot to quell the resistance to it before it can achieve stability.
And I think the Democrats, too, must come to terms with the fact that if we really want even a functioning secular system, we will not have discursive tranquil. In that, especially for a country like Malaysia, with its linguistic, cultural, religious complexities, there will always be a precarious discourse of value contestation. Mm-hmm. And this is a challenge for Democrats to not be complacent about their own values and to keep pushing for it. And even if there are gains, to make improvements on those gains. So on one hand, we don't like this challenge in a lot of ways because we would like to just live in peace. But unfortunately, given the reality of the open space that democracy promises to everybody, this sort of engagement is something that we have to keep doing.
Liana, last words from you, because I think we're kind of running out of time. Yep. We're going to have to recommend something to read before this debate next week. Where would you like to see the discourse go for yourself personally, for the people around you, for the country?
To be honest, I think we also have like a class issue, rural-urban issue. I would actually want to hear what other people think about, you know, like all of these debates are happening in Klang Valley, so we need to, you know, we need to start reaching out, or maybe people from each state should voice out, and you know, what kind of Malaysia do everybody want? I'm sure people in Kelantan will say they would like their house to be built first before they start talking about who do it. And things like that, you know. And
I don't think PAS says that. They say quite the opposite. They say
no, but Merdeka Center definitely conclude that through their research. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's what, you know, like we need to kind of have a consultative process, and we must allow everybody to speak up.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I think in many ways there hasn't been enough of a conversation nationally. Mm. A lot of people in the urban centres do not understand what people...
Didn't NUCC try to do that? The National Unity...
Yeah, I don't know what it's had. It seems to have disappeared, kind of, you know. And this is the problem with a lot of these state-directed projects about national unity. Mm. You know, they're in some sense... I don't know, slightly bureaucratic in their processes. They're not organic. And I think if we're going to engage and truly understand what's happening on the ground, we have to see it from the ground up. We
and
have to
it,
get
and it will be colored with politics as well, given a temperature of a certain moment. But I do recall that those sessions became basically shouting matches, from what I was told.
Exactly, yeah.
Because people were so frustrated and they went there to vent, unfortunately. So we have to try a new model, I think. Mm. Do you have any books to recommend to us? You know, writings that inspire your work?
Oh, dear God. I don't know. I read about science. But then again, are you familiar with the work of Hamza Yusuf?
Mm-hmm.
Purification of the Heart. Mm. That's, you know, to me that's great. And I was just talking to Aisha outside, and I said I think every Malaysian should watch Lelaki Harapan Dunia.
Okay.
By Liu Seng Tat. Because to me it cuts deep. But we had discussion and I said, like, I also think that to some people they don't get it.
Mm-hmm. It was attacked actually quite a bit, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
For being, I think, anti-Malay and stuff like that. Yeah, I think science is very instructive because of the struggles and in Europe. And I remember the science writer Dava Sobel, and she's got a book called Galileo's Daughter that outlines, I mean, not just Galileo's relationship to his daughter who went into a convent and, you know, but also his struggles with the church at that time and the scientific community in its struggles against the Catholic Church or with the Catholic Church. And it's so interesting because I think in many ways these struggles have happened in different countries at different times, and we could possibly learn from their struggles, you know, about how we might begin to think through our current troubles.
Mm-hmm. And just to... restate, you plugged your essay as well. They can look up, and that's called The Perils of Moderation. You can email us at bfmnightschool@gmail.com or look us up on Facebook, BFM Night School. Just type that in the search page. This is all in the build-up to a really awesome debate to be hosted at International Islamic University. The title is Everything in Moderation, and the topic is what we've been talking about today, which is the state of moderation in Malaysia. And it features Dato' Paul Low, YB Nick Nazmi, Professor Dato' Dr. Shad Salim Faruqi, social activist Nikki Chong, and Professor Dr. Nor Farida Abdul Manaf of IIUM. That's on the 29th, but you must register by the 27th. Email joanne.low, that's joanne.low @fco.gov.uk by then, or you can call 2170-2301 to register for more information. Any rate, this has been Night School This Week. I'm Ahmad Fahd Rahmat as usual, alongside me Sharat Kutan. We've been joined by Dr. Liana Khairuddin of IM26 and G40. This is BFM 89.9, the business station.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.